Okay, so for me, I divided them into a couple of areas based on those areas of auditory processing or listening that I talked about earlier. So if your child is having difficulty with auditory attention, you know, that's going to be a time where you're going to make sure that you have time with the child in a quiet place to give them directions or to talk to them face to face so that you know that they're attending with you. We also talk a lot about whole body listening, how to teach a child to sit in a way, both at home and at school, that they are giving the message I'm listening and also setting themselves up for listening. So, you know, this is something parents can work with children on. You know, your bottom in your seat, your feet on the floor, your hands in your lap or on the table, your eyes looking at me, your mouth closed, your ears open, and there's lots of ways to play and practice that with young children and with older children. You know, I talk a lot about reading with your child and reading to your child. And because when we read to children, we are giving them all this auditory information. And if a child doesn't understand something or is having trouble with something, they can stop us or they can have that quizzical look. And there we are in real time being able to explain something or have a discussion. So to me, the most important thing parents can do is read to children. What about the older child? I've gotten a lot of questions about that. Okay, my book goes up to age 7 or 8, and now you've got a child that reads very well to themselves. Do I still continue reading to them? And my answer to that is it's great that they can read to themselves, and that's wonderful, but sharing a harder book with them, for instance, reading Treasure Island to boys when they're, you know, not quite ready to read Treasure Island on their own, leads to tremendous listening skills and excitement and discussion. And I think that the connection between parent and child through those times are so important, and that it can go on longer than just a preschooler's or just until our child learns to read. But then with the older children, I very often recommend that the parent read the book that the child is reading to themselves. And then at some point during the day, especially during dinner time, it's a great time to start talking about what you liked about the book, what the child liked about the book, using open-ended conversation rather than question and answer drill, checking for comprehension, but having a discussion with your child. I think this discussion piece, I think what's been happening with parents is we get into this question and answer mode and checking for comprehension or giving directions and wanting the children to, that we've lost a lot of the discussion about things we're interested in. And if we've read the same book or seen the same movie, it's a great jumping off point to start using language, and what we're setting up is listening to the other person, disagreeing or agreeing, and then having your own turn, which I'm finding children have their skills in turn-taking, verbal turn-taking and listening have really decreased, as has adults, by the way. That ability to have a good conversation with a flow of time to listen and time to talk. So I think that reading, with younger children, playing, actually getting down and playing with your child in something that they like to do, or coloring with your child. I mean, I still love to color, so that's why I'm a speech therapist, I think. But, you know, coloring at the same time and talking about what you're coloring is something that's valuable. Playing with the child and interacting with them. The whole goal is interaction, verbal interaction. So we talk about all these computer programs, you know, that are there for kids to listen to, and they're great and they're wonderful, and that's our, you know, what's happening in our world. But nothing substitutes the interaction between two people, or the turn-taking, or the listening to the other person, or hearing the nuances in people's voices. So anything that connects those two people, parent and child, in a discussion and interaction, to me, is golden. Rhyming with children that are having difficulty with that leads to reading skills, leads to remembering auditory memory, and auditory sequential memory, singing songs with words, you know, even to a record, there's my age, a CD, trying to, you know, teach the child the words and we could always download words, you know, from lyrics.com and then teaching the children the words. These are all things that are fun things to do, but actually work on memory. Music balances out the brain from the right side of the prosody and the rhythm of the sound of the voice and the instrument, and the left side of the brain, which is the language or word based. So listening to music and playing with music and singing together is a huge way to connect and to build listening skills.
Excellent. That definitely covers the younger children with music and books and the older children with music and books. Though I'm not sure if the 10-and-a-half-year-old boys would enjoy their mother singing along.
No. But, you know, with the older, especially with the older girls, but the boys, too, they're listening to music that their friends are listening to. But very often they don't know the words because they can't separate out the words from the music. So when all the kids are sitting around and singing or talking about the lyrics to a song, the auditory processing kids can't participate because they don't know it. So actually in therapy, getting girls ready for sleepovers, you know, where they're all singing and acting out songs, I download the words to more Miley Cyrus songs than you can imagine, and I teach the words, and then we listen to the music, and the kids go off then prepared to socially interact about the music that everybody's talking about. You know, it's really, and you'd be surprised, I have some 10-and-a-half-year-old boys that are really happy. I don't do any songs, any rap song, you know, I won't do music I really can't stand, but it really is powerful for the kids to know what that song's about.
And I think they may see that you get them, and that's a great connection.
They definitely do. It's a connection that is wonderful. And when, you know, I say, I can't dance, but I'm going to try. And, you know, this is actually part of therapy. And then I teach the parents what piece of that they could be doing at home. They'd rather do, you know, they'll do it with me with the door closed and, you know, that's a safe place. But there are things parents can then take out of that to say, wow, I was listening to that song too. I didn't know it said, you know, because we all make auditory mistakes in songs. And so there's another way to talk about it. And it's something the child is interested in, is that music, because it connects them with their peers.
Now, that's a great thing for parents, and I'm sure educators can also use music in the classroom, and their most school districts do have a decent music program. But what advice can you give for those educators? I know that you said earlier that you want to touch the educators and help them, and if they have some tools, their classrooms can be improved. And what is your advice for that?
Well, you know, the big thing now is this RIT, this response to intervention, that's what being set up nationally for teachers. And it's interesting to me when I've looked over the program that there's really not too much based on listening in that program. And I think we need to add in listening components in every stage and in every area of education. It's easier in the lower grades, and it's most effective in the lower grades. I try to talk to them about how they set up their classroom. You know, if we set up kids in rows and we preferentially seat our child with difficulty, they're sitting in the front row and all the other kids are behind them, and they really can't see them and very often don't know who's talking or what's happening. So I really talk to teachers about the configuration of their classroom for good listening. And very often a horseshoe is better with the teacher up front, because the teacher then can call on somebody by name, point to them, and our child knows where to look for the sound and that their peer is talking, and it's better to attend and get the information from your peers. So it actually teaches auditory attention and how to listen to your peers. I talk a lot about checking for comprehension, that as we give directions in a classroom at the front of the class, that our child with auditory processing disorder may not get all the instructions and they might not be written. So checking in at that child's desk and not saying, did you hear me? Because the child will always say yes. And not saying, did you understand me? Because of course they're going to say yes, because they understood what they understood, but they may not have understood the whole message. And so the question to ask them is, what are you going to do? And the child says, oh, and I'll give you, for instance, I was in a class and the teacher held up a math paper in third grade and said, I want you to do every other problem. You're going to have 10 minutes. It's a time test. And bring up your paper when you're done. And so my kid sitting in the classroom with auditory processing disorder did every problem because they didn't hear the word other. And so they're a very good math student, but by the end, everybody had handed in their paper except for this child. This child starts crying because they don't know what went wrong. They go up to the teacher, who's as nice as can be, and says, oh, sweetie, you know, you were supposed to do every other problem. You didn't need to do all of them. But what's our child saying to themselves at the end of that situation? But if the teacher, knowing that the child had some listening challenges, walked over to their desk as they eyeball all of the kids and said, what are you going to do? And the child said, I'm going to do all the problems. And the teacher says, well, you know what? Every other problem, 1, 3, 5, 7, 9, then that child's not going to make the mistake. So that checking in piece, I think, is really, really important for teachers to understand. And for most young children, I talked about in the book, I think, that if the teacher is reading to the class and it's in a preschool or a kindergarten or first grade where there are pictures, and they very often hold the book up so the kids are looking at the pictures while the teacher's talking, our auditory processing kid is making up their own story based on the pictures. So if we hold the pictures to us, read it, and then ask the questions, and then show the pictures as reinforcement, we have turned that activity into a good listening activity. Most games can be turned into listening activities if we think of listening first. You know, so it's really getting teachers to understand that if you do listening of instructions and things first and check in for comprehension and then use your other tools in the classroom, you are going to be training listening skills and helping kids with it.
So we talked a little bit also about you're touching the lives of so many of these kids and giving them the skills and giving their potential, letting them live to their potential, because as you say, it's not cognitive, it's the communication between the exterior and how they process or get the information, and between the center and the book that you've published and the speaking engagements, what are your goals?
Well, I think you named them. My goals are really to spread the word about this, to help kids to really, you know, really make people stop and think about listening as an essential skill. Our ears are open from the moment that we're born. We are listening and building neural connections through listening from the moment we are born. And, you know, listening is a basic essential skill that we build on learning language and then using socially and academically. So to me, it's really getting that awareness out. That's number one. That's a mission of mine. I don't know why I've always been involved in listening and working with kids that struggle with this, but that's always been something very, very important to me. And now I have, you know, because of Rosie and because of everything that's happened since, I have this opportunity. I'm very concerned about the fact that to come to me and to find me, it's going to be a certain kind of parent. And that there are many, many children in a lower economic area in schools that may not find me or this method. And children that are sitting in classes that are never going to be able to come to this kind of situation. So one of my goals is really to be able to get into areas, lower economic areas, and start working with the teachers to understand listening, to get kids' hearings tested. Here in New York City, they have stopped doing hearing screenings in schools, so we're missing a lot of these kids, and these kids are suffering as a result of it. I'm going to be starting after-school listening groups that kids can come to for. We're looking for a grant for those now, so that wouldn't be a cost to the families. But by doing these listening groups, we can teach these through activities, the kinds of things that I do in my book that they might not be getting. The parents might not be getting my book or doing those kinds of activities. The kids might be sitting in front of the TV after school, and instead they can possibly come and work on listening skills, and I'd love to be able to spread that around the country, that we can set up these listening skill workshops for kids that are fun, not based on, you know, schoolwork. I'm also hoping to set up a reading lab here, trying to find different reading techniques, and I use sounds and motion, which is an amazing way of teaching phonological skills. It's not my program. I speak for this program, but it's developed by Fran Centura, and it's movements that are linked with the sounds, and it's an acoustical way of learning to read by using movements. It's an amazing tool, and so I want to start having workshops for those kinds of things, because reading and listening are so clearly tied in with each other. So I could go on and on, but I have a lot of goals. But a lot of it is trying to reach people that normally wouldn't find this kind of therapy or this kind of diagnosis.
Great. And I think you're right. Getting into the schools is probably the way to do it. And I hope that the educators will be open to your messages and your help, because it would help their classroom. We've discussed a lot. Is there anything else that maybe has come up that you wanted to add to our conversation?
No, just that I what I'm also finding, you know, by speaking to this parent is speaking to parents, and that's why I'm so excited to be on this blog with you, is because, you know, reaching the parents that are sitting there frustrated and upset and don't know what to do. The parents that have come in here these past, you know, couple of months especially, it's like, oh my, it's like a lifeline, excuse me, because they really are at sea, not knowing what to do, knowing where to look. And I think trying to find people around the country to connect people with, I'm trying to find other centers that may be like this around the country. I'm having trouble. I'm having trouble finding places that will test and do the intervention based on auditory skills. So I'm really thinking about, you know, the other piece of this is supporting the parents. And I think that's what your blog does. I think that's what I try to do with the book. But I think we need more and more information out there that there is a way to help both the child and the family, because the child is part of a family unit. And that family unit is the most powerful and the most important for that child's development of skills. And the parent needs to be the advocate. And those are hard things to do. So supporting parents, to me, is another goal, but also something that I think needs to be a discussion. How does that happen?